Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to the Last Round Podcast, episode 124. We appreciate you guys listening, whether you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Boxing Social, Geo7. I believe that's how you say it, from our Indian market, which is actually performing very well for us. Very well for us. That specific app really expanded our market in India, which is pretty crazy. Kind of popped out of nowhere, right, Mike?
Well, India's known for its boxing fans, right?
Yeah, they're huge. I know they're, they have a lot of professional wrestling fans too, a lot of WWE fans. Because I've seen the WWE acknowledge them in different formats and like press releases and videos and stuff like that. So there's a big market over there. Obviously, I think there's like a billion people over there. When's the last time, kind of a side tangent real quick here in the introduction. Have we ever had like a fighter from India who kind of made it pretty big, or anybody from that region of the world?
No, I don't think so. Not off the top of my head.
Huh. Somebody's going to be pissed off at us that we didn't mention some name. I guarantee you. So I expect some hate mail, some hate messages. Just direct them to at Michael Shepherd. So he'll take all of them. He'll take all of them. Once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening. Whether this is your 124th time, or maybe it's your 140th time if you combine the bonus episodes we've done over the years, or this is your first time listening to the Last Round. Either way, thank you for taking the time to listen to this boxing podcast between us. Jumping right into it, this past Saturday, the 3rd of April, from the Caesars Palace, Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates on ESPN here in the United States. The area of the world is getting a lot of fights, and it seems that they're going to be getting a lot more. Mike, of course, we'll dive into that piece of information as well. But Jamel Herring retains his 130-pound world championship with the 6-round stoppage over Carl Frampton, who announced his retirement upon losing this matchup. What do you think of this matchup, Mike, and what are your thoughts on Frampton announcing his retirement?
It's one of those fights where you look at it and you think, was it just a fight too far for Carl Frampton? Like, his feet looked slow. He looked like that, he just couldn't really get a hold of the reins. His kind of hands looked a little bit slow. But am I doing Jamel Herring a disservice? Did Jamel just make Frampton look, kind of average? He was just the bigger guy, the height, the reach, he used it well. Every time Carl would try to come in, he was just doing those little check left hooks that he worked really well. His jab looked good. I don't even know if you could have maybe have given Frampton the fourth round, but apart from that, I think Herring just had the perfect game plan on the night. It was kind of sad to see. I would have loved for Carl Frampton to have got his, third world title at three different weights. It would have been a really nice way to go out. But at the same time, Herring's been on the show a couple of times. Both of them really, really, really nice guys. It was great to see afterwards that, Frampton didn't make any excuses, just kind of said, he was beaten by the better guy on the night. Herring as well, celebrated, but I thought he was really respectful. Great fight. I thought that was the best that we'd actually seen Jamel Herring, in his last fight against Oquendo. I think now, looking at that performance, I think he could say that he was kind of suffering from COVID, because that wasn't the best performance from him. And it would be nice to see, I think, Top Rank put him on the A side at last. I think it was on an interview when we had him on that I think Herring said that he always felt that he was always the B side, and Top Rank had put him in a couple of fights where they kind of thought he'd lose. And I think that was maybe the case in this. They wanted Carl Frampton to get, the third world title and then maybe go on to fight Shakur. But I think, Carl's obviously said, win, lose or draw, this would have been his last fight, because he'd already told his friends and his family that. But, I saw that the WBO had already put a letter out to the team saying that the winner of this fight, Shakur Stevenson, And I know Shakur's friends with all of that camp, Crawford, Herring. I think, do they just give him a little bit of a side pot of cash for him to go away and they try to fight Valdez? Because I think, you know, Herring is probably just looking for a few big paydays so he can walk off into the sunset.
I disagree right there. I think Herring, obviously he wants to get paid. And every fighter gets into this sport who gets to this high of a level, wants to be able to get paid to provide for themselves and their family and create a legacy going forward. But I truly believe that Herring fights for legacy as well. He wants to fight the best guys. He really does. He really does. Which I give it to him. I mean, just based on the interviews that we've had with him over the years, and then, you know, seeing other interviews that he's given to other platforms, I truly believe that. I truly believe he's one of those few guys who just, he's willing to fight the best guys. I mean, you know, and then kind of going back to this matchup, I was really surprised how Carl Frampton looked in this fight. I didn't expect that. I think last week, I don't even know if I announced my pick technically on the show, when we had Yahoo Sports Kevin Ioli on last week's episode. But I think you and Kevin Ioli both picked Carl Frampton. Am I wrong?
I'm not too sure if I picked, but yeah, I would have picked Carl Frampton. It was one of those ones where I kind of looked at it. It was kind of not the same stylistically, but it was kind of like Teofimo Lopez against Lomachenko. I think that was a division too far for Carl Frampton, like it also was for Lomachenko. But obviously, you know, I wanted, you know, a fellow Brit to do that. I thought it was such a nice, well, both of them are such nice guys, but it would have been great to see Carl Frampton win in that third weight category and just go down as, you know, Ireland's, you know, all-time best fighter. And he probably still is with just those two weight categories. You know, there was a period of time where Carl Frampton was probably one of the best fighters on the planet around the time when he was fighting Leo Santa Cruz. I think he won, you know, Fighter of the Year from The Ring magazine.
Mm-hmm. I think that was 2016, I believe.
2016, I believe, yeah. You know, just a murderer's row of some of the people that he's been in with over the last couple of years. Some softer fights, but around the time he had those two fights with, you know, Leo Santa Cruz, there was nobody around that weight division, I think, that was really kind of, you know, as good. And also would actually go in there into some of the fights and put on the performance that he did. I think, you know, sometimes he had too many wars. If you look back over his career, and maybe this was just the time that, you know, it was just one too far.
Maybe. All those hard wars and all those hard matchups he was in over the years probably seems like they caught up to him. But I don't think it was unrealistic for people to think that he was going to perform like this, or realistic. I don't know. Maybe I confused myself, but what is he? 33, 34. Mm-hmm. You know, even at that age, you still have some left technically, you know, if you're at this type of level. I mean, look at Crawford. Crawford's, I think, 34. And he's still as dangerous as ever. I mean, obviously as you get older, the engine slows down a little bit, but unless you're Mayweather, but I thought he still had something left. I thought it was going to be a good matchup because I knew Herring was hungry, and you know he was now being trained by BOMAC, so he was training under Brian McIntyre, who trains Terrence Crawford, and he's training with that whole group over there. You know, I'm sure he's maybe sparred a little bit with Terrence Crawford just to kind of get some sharpness in. And obviously if you have one of the best pound for pound fighters in the world right there in your camp, he's obviously going to give him advice. So I knew it was going to be I was hoping it would be an exciting matchup, but I thought Frampton would have, you know, leveled up. I thought he would have kind of give us that last hurrah in a sense where, you know, cause he's obviously a talented fighter. Like you mentioned his two fights with Leo Santa Cruz a couple of years ago. They were both exciting matchups. They both split them down the middle. I don't even think they had a third fight. They should have had a third fight where they each split the two. But yeah, I was really surprised. You know, like you said, do we give the credit to Herring because of, you know, his sharpness and his talent? Was he just too much for Carl Frampton, regardless of how Carl Frampton came into that matchup? Or was Carl Frampton just not there anymore? You know, was he just not the fighter he once was? You know, who knows? Only maybe Carl Frampton knows that. Only Jamel Herring knows that. Who knows? who knows? But I do think that Herring being with Brian McIntyre and Terrence Crawford and that whole team right there definitely made a difference. I think it was the X factor because he did look a lot more sharp. He looked a lot more sharper than he has in his prior fights. And I think, you know, having this title, especially since he fought Jonathan Oquendo, like you mentioned, from that fight to this fight, you can tell there was a huge difference. There was a huge difference. And obviously, Herring is a big 130-pounder. He's a tall one. He's a tall one. You know, sometimes I think we've talked about it on the episodes before where we look at him and say, oh, you know, how does he make 130 pounds? You know, he could technically be like 140-pounder, you know, but he makes it and it works out. But, you know, it sucks for Carl Frampton that he had to go out like that, but it's not like he didn't have a good career and he was in a lot of memorable matchups in the boxing world. But yeah, I was just really surprised. I mean, am I wrong for being surprised that that's how he performed and he just came up on the losing end?
No, because I think looking at it, you'd struggle really to give him a round, maybe the fourth round. You know, going into the fight, you know, I think everybody kind of said, you know, Herring's obviously the bigger, taller, stronger guy, and he was obviously going to try and keep it long, you know, not let Carl Frampton in because he's so much shorter. The only time that he really could have done anything was, you know, when he kind of used to do that thing where he'd kind of jump in from the outside, let off a combo, and then he'd be back out. And that was the only way that really Frampton had. And Herring just really stuck to a really great game plan. And Herring, he doesn't waste much. You know, he was literally just on the outside like a sniper, you know, which is kind of a good analogy to use since he was a Marine. And it was just perfect, picture perfect. Great performance from him. He, you know, he just rattled and frustrated Carl Frampton. You could see at times, I think Carl Frampton was, you know, kind of getting annoyed. He just couldn't find a way in. He couldn't get his time in. His feet looked kind of slow. Great performance from Herring, really. I think you really just have to give it to him. You know, Jamie Moore said afterwards, you know, it just didn't come together. He said sparring was good. Carl looked good in the gym. So I just don't really think we can take anything away from Herring, because if you look at him, I think a lot of the time people have underestimated him. You know, there's quite a few fights where people thought that Herring was going to come up second best, including Top Rank. And he just...
Yeah, when he won the title over Ito a couple years ago, he openly admits it. He's like, Top Rank didn't want me to win. They had their money on Ito, and then they were going to push him forward to fight, you know, Shakur, Oscar Valdez, or whatever. He even says it openly. He was like, yeah, I derailed their plans. He says that. But, you know, I mean, I think that notion really gets to Jamel Herring, even if he admits it or not. And he uses that as fuel. Now that he's a world champion, especially, he uses it in these title defenses. And when he's like in front of the camera or when he's fighting in the ring with the gloves on and everything. And we got to remember, too, he's 35 years old. So he doesn't have that much time left in the ring, you know, so he has to take advantage of the time he has, right?
No, yeah, it's true. You know, Carl couldn't really use that as an excuse because obviously, you know, Herring was the older man. So, you know, great to see. I think Herring should really just fit in as many defenses of those titles as he can. And I honestly think he'll try to chase the money. I don't imagine he's made a great deal of money throughout his career so far. And I think if I was him, you'd just pick the biggest paydays, which I think honestly probably would be Oscar Valdez, which is a good fight in itself. Does he really fight the younger, skillful Shakur? I don't know if that would even generate as much money. So I personally would try to get him to step aside, maybe even relinquish the title. I'm sure he doesn't want to do that, but he may have to get, you know, to get the Valdez fight further down the line. I think stylistically that would be a better fighter for him as well.
Valdez?
I think so. Shakur's, I mean, ask Kevin Ioli what he thinks of Shakur.
Right. Kevin Ioli, you know, says that Stevenson's probably the best fighter in the world in terms of, you know, what the prospect of he could be in the future, you know, that he could be a future pound for pound star, like with no doubt, which, I mean, obviously as fans, as boxing fans, and media, we watch his fights. We've seen his fights. We've seen him since he turned professional, since he came from the Olympic Games. And the kid's good. I mean, I think his last fight, was it the Joette Gonzalez one, right? Was that the last fight?
He had one after against... I think he did, right? Is now. It wasn't a big name, if I remember rightly.
Right, okay. But I remember the Joey Gonzalez one because that was kind of like a... it had a lot of attention. Joey Gonzalez was also, I believe, undefeated. And then, you know, the whole Shakur dating his sister and the whole family involved. It was a dramatic narrative for that whole situation. But Shakur Stevenson is talented. He's extremely talented. And a Valdez Herring matchup would be exciting. Anybody with Valdez is exciting. Even guys with no name who fight Valdez have exciting matchups with Valdez. Because, you know, Valdez ends up going down from some guy who nobody even knows, but then he comes back and wins. So, like, there's always some type of excitement in Oscar Valdez fights. But, I mean, we're talking about top-ranked guys here. You know, technically, Tank Davis, I know he's kind of busy, tied up with some legal issues right now, but Tank Davis technically has a belt at 130 pounds now. Is it the regular WBA super featherweight title? Is that what it is? You know, that he won when he knocked out Leo Santa Cruz. So assuming that he does still fight at 130 pounds, Tank Davis is there. Obviously, that's not realistic. We know because of the promotional disagreements among Top Rank, PBC, Al Haymon, and all that stuff. But, you know, you talk about biggest money. It's not Oscar Valdez if you want to be realistic about it. It's Tank Davis. Tank Davis is the moneymaker at 130 and possibly 135 pounds, you know, possibly.
I wonder what the size difference would be in that.
Yeah, no, that's true.
One of you is short. I don't know if he's as short as Kyle, but, you know, you'd think maybe a similar performance, but, you know, the Davis just has that one-shot power. So
right.
It'd be an interesting matchup. I just think that the Valdez one is unfortunately easier to make. No crossing the street, as they say.
Do you think that Top Rank is still, their plan is still, they still expect Herring to lose the title to either Valdez or Shakur? Because like I mentioned earlier, Jamel openly acknowledges that when he fought Ito for the title, he wasn't the one to be, he wasn't the number one pick, the A side in a sense. Top Rank had plans for Ito. They expected Ito to win and then move forward. Jamel Herring put a wrench in those plans and now he's world champion. So he openly admits that. Do you still believe in a sense, the Top Rank still expects that to happen and they're going to put Jamel Herring up against Valdez or Shakur? My bet is that they're going to put him against Shakur. Like you said, the WBO did some letter where they ordered a fight with Shakur Stevenson. I mean, we all know the associations here in the boxing world between sanctioning bodies and promotional bodies. The WBO and Top Rank are closely associated. WBA and PBC, Al Haymon, are closely associated. You know, so like it's stuff like that, you know, WBC and stuff like that. It's not, you know, if you're a boxing fan, you know, those relationships exist, you know, they're not going to acknowledge them, you know, but they exist. You see it. The evidence is right there. Do you think, going back to my original question, the Top Rank is still expecting Herring to lose the title to either Shakur or Valdez?
Yeah. I think they just probably feel that the other two, Shakur and Valdez, have a bigger upside.
Right. Yeah, I can see that.
At the end of the day, it's a business for them.
Right.
And I just think that Valdez is Mexican. His last performance against Burchell, I'm sure there was a huge amount of Hispanic fans that jumped on the bandwagon after that performance.
Right.
And also, I just think Shakur kind of, you know, he's got that kind of Floyd Mayweather style. And I think he would also just have a, you know, a big legion of fans. You know, he hangs around Crawford. He goes to all the shows. He kind of posts a lot, does a lot of stuff on social media. I think he's kind of working out the boxing business and how to attract, you know, putting bums on seats, selling tickets increases your paycheck. You know, and Shakur doesn't necessarily knock a lot of people out. Very, very stylish in the way that he fights, but you definitely have to be more of a boxing purist where, you know, Valdez is just, you know, edge of your seat stuff. He goes down, gets back up, knocks someone else down, and he might go down again, and then he knocks them out. You know, he's great to watch, which is completely different to Shakur. But to answer your question, yeah, I think he would be the B side in both of those fights because the other two have a higher upside.
See, I think in that regard, I think Herring, that fuels Jermell Herring. That he's the world champ, but like he'll still be the B side, which everybody knows that's how it works. Going back to, you know, I just recently watched some old HBO 24/7 face off videos where Max Kellerman moderates the between both of the fighters who are going to fight in that near future. I watched Miguel Cotto and Sergio Martinez, and there was a piece in that face off where they're talking about A side, B side. Cotto is the A side in that fight, even though Martinez is the middleweight champion. And Sergio Martinez has an issue with that. And he's calling him, you know, like a diva and all that stuff. And then Cotto or Martinez says like, oh, you know, it's funny that Cotto's saying that I'm the biggest fight he's ever had with, this is the biggest fight he's ever had, and I'm a class B fighter. And then Cotto has to define what he means. He was like, I'm not calling him a class B fighter. I'm saying there's a side A and side B. You know, whoever fills the stadium, whoever sells the tickets is the A side financially. Which I get it, you know, as if you kind of put them next to each other, Jermell Herring in contrast to those guys, especially Valdez, anybody with Valdez, at this point, Valdez is going to be the A side. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. But I think that fuels Jermell Herring. I think that fuels him a lot, you know? And I think there's a lot of, you can make a lot of money with him. Like he's a military guy. He's a Marine, you know, he's a former Marine. You know, he has a, you know, a really comeback story, like a good comeback story that he's went through. I believe he lost a daughter when he was younger, and some other stuff, you know. I'm sure he saw a lot of crazy stuff when he was in the military, you know, and coming back from all that stuff and then kind of rising up and becoming a world champion in the sport of boxing, you know, especially if they can find ways. I think at one point they were trying to figure out ways before the pandemic if they can have him fight in front of like an army base or a military base or something. I think there was plans for that. I think he even said it. Stuff like that is what you got to do, you know, put or try to get him to do, get on interviews. I mean, the guy can talk, you know, he's professional, you know, he knows what he's doing. I think you can make, they can, his stock can really go up. You know, he has a story. He's a great fighter. You know, he's a world champ, and you know, he's a military guy. I mean, you know, in the United States, I don't know if it's like this in the UK, you tell me, but you know, in the United States, the military, you know, everybody's, you know, they love the military. You know, it's great. These people go to battle for us. You know, they voluntarily sign up and go fight for the country, which is great. So I'm telling you, man, the story's there. They just have to know how to navigate it. But, you know, yeah, it is what it is. You know, do you think, now that he's beat Frampton, which is the most significant win of his career, that his next fight, maybe towards the latter half of the year, is either against Valdez or Shakur Stevenson?
I think so. I think, you know, if I was him, you want to take those big fights, you know, especially look what happened to, you know, Josh Warrington. He tried to have like a gimme, should we say, a little warm-up fight in between. And, you know, he came unstuck. So if I was Jermell, I would just try to go for, you know, those trying to unify the titles, which is also, it's going to be a big payday. It's going to be a big fight. And I also think, like you were touching on, I think the problem he had with that Marine, you know, the fact that he was a Marine or is a Marine, sorry, is it was a blessing and a curse, because I think some people thought he was a gimmick.
Oh, and really?
I think so. Yeah. I believe that some people thought, because he doesn't have a flashy knockout style, I honestly think that people thought he was more of a gimmick and he was getting gimme fights.
I misunderstood you. That he wasn't saying that it wasn't a gimmick that he was an actual Marine.
No, what I mean is that they used all that together and they tried to say, you know, like they were just trying to build off that. And I think yet again, he proved them wrong. You know,
right.
he could fight. And also he went into those fights as a B-side, like we touched on, and time after time after time, I think he kept proving people wrong. And, you know, he just went out there and had the best performance and the biggest night of his life. Unfortunately, it would have been great to have done that in a packed crowd over in Ireland. I'm pretty, you know, he would have definitely have silenced the whole stadium.
Right.
Like you said, he talks so well. He's so respectful. He has a big fan base in the UK.
Right. That's true. Yeah. You've mentioned that here on past episodes that he has a lot of UK fans. So, I mean, yeah, I think Herring's one of those guys that, you know, he goes into these fights, like we mentioned, as the B-side, even though he's a world champ. Like if he goes against Stevenson or Valdez, but he's one of those guys that, from my point of view, and you're more of a betting guy than I am, but from my point of view, he's one of those guys where, like, okay, I'm comfortable putting money on him as the underdog, in a sense. You know, that's a good bet for me. You know, even if I lose my money, I'm still going to be like, hey, man, like I still had confidence in my bet. You know, I mean, am I looking at it wrong in that way? Or what do you think?
No, I would agree with that. You know, sometimes, you know, the bookies get it wrong. They kind of just go with the most popular. But right. Sometimes you can spring up, like if you'd have had, you know, good money on Herring and his ever since he won the world title, you would have come home with a nice chunk of change.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then before we move on from this matchup, I do want to touch on the production of that whole event. I mean, excuse my language, but the production sucked. What do you think?
Terrible. Yeah, terrible. Absolutely terrible. Everything from some of the camera angles to the announcer. Sounded like a cheesy kind of like bingo host.
Right.
I have no idea where they got that from. And it kind of just sucked. It was a huge, huge night for Carl Frampton, huge night for Jermell Herring, huge night for Dubai. You know, having a big show like that, a world title fights over there. And it's not the first show that MTK's ever put on. So it's not as if, you know, they were brand new and they hadn't worked all this out beforehand. So, yeah, it's very disappointing, and I think you could see that from the reactions on Twitter and, you know, everywhere on social media. People were, you know, kind of giving them a lot of stick for that, and I'm sure MTK saw that. You know, like DAZN has openly, you know, put stuff on there for people to say what they do and they don't like, and you know, I think they'll learn from that, or they definitely need to.
I wonder what ESPN thought about it. I know they put it on the app, but it was still an ESPN. You know, associated event, if you look at it that way, even though I'm sure ESPN wasn't really involved except for transmitting the feed to the United States. But yeah, the whole television production was just terrible. Like you mentioned, you know, it's, but you know, we know why, especially during this pandemic, why events have been going, or even before the pandemic, if you talk about Anthony Joshua and Andy Ruiz, they're starting to go to that part of the world because that part of the world has a lot of money. They reportedly want to increase their tourism aspect of their country. So they're trying to get all these big events, like WWE has been over there quite a few times over the past couple of years. Now, big boxing events, the biggest boxing event, obviously in recent memory, was Anthony Joshua, Andy Ruiz too. I mean, maybe that's how Top Rank was looking at it. Like, hey, you know, Jermell Herring could lose this fight. You know, we might as well try to get as much money as we can. And Dubai is paying the most money to us, you know, so we might as well just throw it over there and try to, in a way, cash out. Cause I mean, people talked about that when Anthony Joshua faced Andy Ruiz the second time in the rematch. Remember how they said, oh, how Eddie Hearn is just throwing it in Dubai or Saudi Arabia because, they were paying the most cash, and he thought, well, if Anthony Joshua loses, that really derails his financial pool. So I might as well cash out. But if he wins, we can still keep going. You know, maybe that's how they looked at it. What do you think?
It's a business.
Right. It's a business. Yeah. Yeah. That's what happens. You know, but it's good to throw out there to tell people, to tell our listeners that's how it works. That's how it works. You talk about, everybody's favorite, Twitter personality, Rick Glaser, international boxing agent, who was on our show last year or, I believe last year, maybe the beginning of the pandemic or something. He recently put out a tweet. I don't know if it was today or within the last couple of days, where he said the Top Rank is just like corporate America, that they're run like a corporate American company. So that's why ESPN does business with them. I paraphrase what he actually tweeted, but he said something along those lines. You talk about business. There it is. But, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, as I mentioned, Herring gets the TKO in the sixth round, and let's see where he goes from here. It's likely either Valdez or Stevenson. The WBO did officially order Shakur Stevenson, which I believe I'm 99% sure that's going to be the fight. That's going to be the next fight, because the WBO, like I mentioned earlier, they're very closely associated with Top Rank. That's not, everybody knows that. Every boxing fan knows that. So of course, I'm sure they reached out to Top Rank and said, hey, you know, we'll officially order it. We'll put a statement out there. Okay, great. Yeah, go ahead. Do it. You know, that's what we want. That's the direction we're going in, you know? So I say Stevenson's next. And then the matchup that Top Rank wants to put on is Valdez and Stevenson sometime in 2022. That sounds realistic to me. But moving on that card, Donnie Nietes gets the 10-round unanimous decision win over Pablo Carrillo. This is for the vacant WBO International Super Flyweight title. Nietes is a former four-division title holder. I feel like he's been around for a long, long time. I mean, am I wrong? I know he's 43-1-5, so, you know, he's kind of been kind of creeping there and there, but like he's always popped up on cards. But you know, and I remember when I saw him on this card, I was like, oh, there he is again. You know, he just always pops up when you kind of start forgetting about him. There he is, boom, he pops up. But what'd you think about his 10-round win?
You could see he was a little rusty. You know, he'd had a lot of time out of the ring. I think it was even 2 years out of the ring. But I think he realizes, you know, that division with the, you know, Juan Estrada, Rungvisai, Chocolatito, Ioka, Joan Hancajas. It's a good time to be around. You know, those guys, like we've touched on before in previous shows, didn't get paid a lot historically. Now that kind of division is kind of taken off, so there's probably some good money kicking around. He still has a name. You know, he's still, you know, former four-division title holder, Donnie Nietes. So why not come back? You know, bank some money.
Right. And maybe Top Rank, that's what Top Rank is hoping, that he keeps winning and raises his profile a little bit more. And maybe they can get a piece of that whole super flyweight division, you know, Chocolatito, Estrada, Sisraket, Sorungvisai, you know, and kind of maybe they can jump into that mix. Cause I don't know if Estrada or Chocolatito and those guys are signed to like long-term deals with like DAZN and Eddie Hearn and those guys. I don't know if they are or not. I don't think they are. If it is, it's maybe a 2-fight deal max, depending on what it is. But maybe Top Rank knows that. Maybe Top Rank sees that, and they're, you know, if Nietes, you know, maybe after this they offer a fight to, you know, Chocolatito or whoever, just depending on how their whole contracts over there with DAZN and Eddie Hearn are, and they bring them over to ESPN to have a fight with him. You know, they kind of get in that mix, like I said. So. But you're right, though. It's a good time to be in that whole division with all those names I just mentioned. And like you said, Nietes still has the credentials, you know, the former four-division world title holder. There's not a lot of people currently in the sport of boxing who are multiple division world champions, especially four-division world champions. That's, you know, that's a lot. I know in the lower weight classes, excuse me, it's a lot easier in a sense, but
He's up there with Broner.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. But you know, I'm sure Top Rank is going to try to get him some type of marquee matchup with one of those names eventually. You know, you would think that's the goal. Everybody always wants to get to the marquee names in the division, and right now it's Estrada and Chocolatito. You know, Sorungvisai is also there, but the moneymakers are Chocolatito and Estrada at the moment, or Carlos Cuadras. He's also still available, so you never know. You never know. Also on that card, Turzenbay Kulkamet.
TK.
TK. Mm-hmm. Let's just go with TK. Gets the first round knockout and remains undefeated at 3-0 over Heber. I believe it's Heber. I said it wrong. I know I did. Rondon, who suffers a first professional loss of his career. And this was for the WBC International Super Welterweight title. What did you think about this matchup?
I thought TK looked good, but that Heber Rondon, when you looked at his record, gee, it's like Christopher Lovejoy's. Literally fought 20, like...
One shot.
Literally just fought 20 dudes that we'd see over in TJ on the beach. Those type of fights. Crazily empty record. You know, on paper, you kind of looked at it, you were like, geez, like TK's fight is 2-0, and he's fighting somebody who's 20-0? You're like, geez. And then you look at the record and you think, ah, okay, okay. And you could kind of see he went in there and just battered him, just pretty much put him, it was kind of like a video game, right hook that finished him off. Obviously, he's kind of new to the Jimmy Moore gym. So, you know, he looks good. Another Kazakhstani. So, you know, those guys always seem, you know, very good, have good amateur records. Get into the ring, they always kind of look the real deal. So I'd be interested to see, you know, I'm sure they'll move him quick and to see how he looks.
Right, right. TK, I like that. I like that nickname, but, you know, Heber Rondon. How much do you think, you know, kind of since you touched on the whole, he's kind of like Christopher One-Shot Lovejoy, which is still, I saw that shirt once on, somebody tweeted it, and it was hilarious, hilarious. I kind of wanted to get it just because, you know, it was like a novelty thing. But you mentioned how there is, that does happen. There is professional fighters who go and they just pad up their resume with wins and they get to like 15-0, 20-0, whatever, just so they can get a significant fight on some type of, you know, prominent platform. You know, that's the goal for them. That's the goal. They go and fight in Tijuana or in Mexico and they pad up the resume. They fight, you know, 8 times a year or, you know, twice a month or something just to pad it up. So that way they get noticed by, you know, a promotional company, Top Rank, Matchroom, Golden Boy, PBC, Al Heyman, you know, so they can get noticed when they need, so they need somebody to step in like, oh, this guy's undefeated. He's probably dangerous. He's knocked out 18 of the 20 guys he's faced. You know, it's a narrative that you could sell because the fans and even the commentators at the time aren't aware and know anything about that fighter. So it's like, oh, well, I mean, this could be true. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. But I mean, how common do you think that is, that there's a lot of guys like that who go and they purposely go and try to pad their record like that on purpose in order to get a fight like this and be able to get some type of payday and be on some type of stage like this?
I'll tell you, someone who's been down there when I've been doing the notes for the show, someone that's been down there quite a lot over the last year, trying to pick up wins, or has been picking up wins, Austin Trout.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's interesting. Tell us more.
He's been down there, I think, just trying to, you know, so they can probably say, oh, you know, Austin's on a four fight win streak, and then he's still Austin Trout. So, you know, I'm sure he'll do that, pick up a few wins.
Yeah.
He's got that name. He'll sell that name to an up-and-coming fighter.
Is he still with, like, PBC affiliated? Or no? He might be. I mean, you know, look at it this way. Now you mentioned Austin Trout. Do you think that at any point, and maybe this is more like a conspiracy, which this is a conspiracy episode of The Last Round, but do you think that at times that these promotional companies, for example, Austin Trout, who has fought his last several fights under the PBC banner, do you think that maybe Al Heyman or the team over there tells him like, hey, you know, go get some fights, or we'll set up fights for you in Mexico or here and there so you can pad up your record. You know, they won't get much publicity, but that way you can come back and, you know, you can get a decent fight against like Lara again or somebody, you know, get you another payday, you know, kind of to be able to justify getting somebody like him or somebody who's doing something like that, another matchup where it gives them some type of payday. You know what I mean? Like, do you think that happens where these promotional companies tell these fighters or they send these fighters, hey, go pad your resume with some wins, just go fight some random dudes and then get like 3 or 4 wins and come, come back, we'll bring you back, and we'll put you in this matchup, and then we'll sell that, hey, you're on a 4-fight win streak, you've knocked all the guys out.
Yeah, I bet they do. Or if they have a PR person, or if they're PR savvy themselves, you know, it keeps them busy. It's, you know, instead of saying, for since we're talking about Trout, instead of saying, you know, he's lost to Charlo, drew with Geisha, they can turn around and say he's got, you know, recent wins over Juan Galvan and Rosabel Montoya. You know, yeah. to the casual fan, they'll be like, oh, okay, you know, he's got two wins, he must be pretty good. Instead of saying, like, you know, in his last couple of fights, he's got a draw and been, you know, lost to Charlo. So right. You know, he's been down there, you know, he was actually there in February. He got a unanimous decision win over Juan Armando Galvan. So
it happens. It happens. I think it happens a lot more than people think. We just don't have eyeballs there. You know, it's not being publicized as we think. So nobody hears about it. But, you know, that just, you mentioning that about Austin Trout just means that probably later this year, he's going to get another significant matchup on like the Fox platform or the Showtime platform, assuming he stays without him in PBC. So that seems like the direction they're going in, but who knows? Who knows? Rounding off that card, Keyshawn Davis gets the second win of his career over Richmond Ashley, who suffers the second loss of his career. What'd you think about Davis's performance?
Good. You know, you can see he's just very calm, experienced. He's definitely, I think, going to be the real deal. And you can see a lot of people now are jumping on the bandwagon. I saw Spencer Fearon, you know, was kind of saying in recent IFL TV interviews that, you know, he's my guy. So, you know, he's kind of jumped on the bandwagon already. I don't think it really took, you know, a genius to realize, just with his pedigree in the amateurs, the people he hangs around with outside, when he talks well, you know, he's kind of confident, but not like overly cocky. You can see that he kind of knows the business. He's kind of really got everything that you kind of want in a fighter. So he's just got to really just get in there and do the business now and hopefully not, you know, get distracted outside.
So he just made his debut on February 27th, and now he just had his second fight pretty much within a month, almost a little bit over a month. But, you know, they're moving him fast. They're moving him fast. I would say what, maybe 4 to 6 fights by the end of the year. Does that sound about right?
It looks like everyone kind of knows what kind of star he's going to be. So I think he'll pop up on, you know, every major undercard that they can, kind of like what Matchroom do with Mark Castro is constantly on Canelo undercards.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. I could see them doing this with Davis moving forward, especially since he's had his two professional fights, his first two professional fights within pretty much a month and a half of each other. So, you know, that he's on the fast track here. You know, him and Mark Castro, man, you know, Mark Castro definitely has the best luck in the world right now. But, you know, it seems like all of his professional fights are going to be on Canelo undercards from this point forward. Assuming Canelo, you know, stays active, if Canelo fights 2 times a year, I'm sure they'll try to put Castro on there, but Castro's probably going to fight a little bit more after those. But if Canelo keeps fighting 3, 4, especially 4 times a year, you'll definitely see somebody like Castro on there at every turn. Also, this past weekend from the Humo Arena in Uzbekistan on DAZN, MJ Akhmadiliev gets the 5th round stoppage over Ryosuke Iwasa, who suffers a 4th loss of his professional career. MJ retains his WBA and IBF super bantamweight titles that he won last February from Danny Roman on Super Bowl weekend here in the United States. MJ, yeah, I think at this point, he's unbeatable in that division. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan. I like his style. You know, I'd like to see him, you know, maybe have that second fight with Danny Roman, since, you know, he kind of relinquished him of both titles. It was I thought MJ won, but there was kind of like a section of fans that thought Danny Roman's bodywork had put enough in the bank, you know, since he was the champion. So I'd like to see them run that back. In this fight, I thought it was, you know, kind of, you could see that MJ was eventually going to get the stoppage. I thought the referee was slightly premature, since the fact, you know, Iowa had kind of, you know, taken a lot of punishment, but hadn't gone down. But I think, you know, essentially it probably was going to go that way anyway, in a couple of rounds. So, you know, he kind of got the job done. Good, good, successful homecoming for him in Uzbekistan. So great fighter, great fighter.
Right, right. Yeah, like I said, I agree with that. I'd like to see the rematch between him and Danny Roman. Even though MJ was given the win in that fight. It's not like that. I don't think Danny Roman was outclassed. I think he belonged in there, and he showed why he's been a unified world champion for so long. So yeah, I'd run that back. I mean, it's not like there's a lot of, you know, marquee matchups, quote unquote, that you can put on at super bantamweight. I mean, who else could you put on in that division?
I'm trying to think who's with the WBC. Is it still Vargas or?
Is it? I think so. I mean, Vargas is there. That's true. What about Ronnie Rios?
I know that he's supposed to have a big fight coming up. So,
Ronnie Rios, Golden Boy needs to put him, you know, make it offers on there. Maybe if they have to look at the rankings, but
you got, what, I think Stephen Fulton, Lewis Neary, Brandon Figueroa, Danny Roman, I can't pronounce it right, Reese Alim, Angelo Leo. So there's a few fights in there, but I still think, you know, Stephen Fulton would be a unification. I think he obviously has the WBO now after he beat Angelo Leo. Lewis Neary is always in a good fight if he can make weight. Brandon Figueroa obviously has, you know, some random WBA title, like one of the lesser ones. So, but I would still like to see the fight against Danny Roman. Stephen Fulton would be a good fight, and so would Danny Roman, you know, my opinion.
Right. We'll see. We'll see. But now that you mentioned all those names, there is a lot of, it seems like there's a lot of fun matchups that can be rotated around. So hopefully they do it as we move forward out of this pandemic, especially. Also on the card, Israel Madrimov remains undefeated 7-0 with the 10-round unanimous decision win over Emony Colombo, who suffers the first defeat of his career. Colombo was down in round number 8 as Madrimov went on his way to the decision win. What'd you think about Madrimov's win?
I mean, he has a good style for the fans to watch. He has that kind of, like, he's constantly moving in and out of range, in and out of range, that kind of herky-jerky, switch-hitting style. He does get hit a lot, which kind of makes it also, you know, kind of enjoyable for us to watch as fans. I just don't know. I worry for him because he's on the wrong side of the street. You know, all the big fights in his division are over at PBC, and we know they don't like to share toys. So, it's going to be interesting for him. Where does he go? He's going to have to become a mandatory and force any of those fights against Jermell Charlo, Brian Costano.
Right. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. Speaking of sharing toys with PBC, I saw somebody that, you know, this, I feel like we see this conversation on boxing Twitter all the time as the months go by, that it always pops up here and there, but you kind of reminded me of it because sometimes people forget that Top Rank and, like, Golden Boy for that matter, had sued Al Haymon and PBC in an attempt of violating the Muhammad Ali Act here in the United States. I mean, like, if you were Al Haymon, the head of the PBC, and you were sued and you fought and you won, you know, the decision was made in your favor, what or what have you. I mean, would you really want to share your profits and your creation with the promoters who sued you?
And he definitely doesn't, does he? You know, he very, very rarely will, you know, let anybody cross the road. I think, you know, like we always say, it's a business. So if it makes business sense and creates money for you, then I think that's essentially what you do. You know, you don't necessarily really care on the outcome of some of the fights. I'm sure some of the times they just want to make the biggest fights to get themselves, you know, the biggest profits. That's why, you know, sometimes, even though they're not supposed to, you know, they'll promote and manage the fighters, you know, so they're also getting the promoter's fee, and they're also getting a nice 20% of, for Al Haymon, for example, will get the promoter's fee, and he's always doing PBC versus PBC. So he's getting 20% of that guy's purse, 20% of that guy's purse. So, you know, he's rolling in money.
Yeah, man. You talk about gaming the system. He definitely figured it out, you know? Yeah. But I mean, like you said, like, obviously we want to see him. If it makes business sense, it'll do it. But that also hinders the matchups that we want to see that don't make business sense. You know, if there's no financial incentive or heavy financial incentive, but these fighters, at least to hardcore boxing fans, would produce a quality, great matchup, we won't see it, you know, essentially, because it doesn't draw money. It doesn't make financial sense for each side for these networks to come together or something. Sometimes we see fighters get sent to the other promotions or the other networks to get some fights. Sometimes we see that, but, you know, not all the time. But it's like Crawford Spence. Crawford Spence, like, everybody knows that that's, if not the number one fight, maybe the top two best fight matchups that you can have at this moment right now between those two guys. But if you want to kind of put an analogy behind it, this isn't, you know, Mayweather Pacquiao, who were dancing around each other for 7-8 years before they actually fought each other in 2015. Obviously, that matchup made a ton of financial sense, you know. And I think a couple of years ago when this narrative started that we want to see Spence Crawford, you know, how many years are we into hearing that narrative? Maybe two?
Probably,
three?
I think because of COVID, it's probably been 3 years, yeah.
So maybe 3 years. I think realistically, maybe both sides expected, okay, well, in the next 3 years, it'll get bigger. I mean, I think it is bigger, but I think they maybe hoped that it would become, you know, demonstrably bigger in terms of the financials, which it really hasn't. It really hasn't. Like, there's not a lot of people out there who know. I mean, what's the percentage, in your opinion, if you go and ask a casual fan, hey, who do you know who Errol Spence is? Do you know who Terrence Crawford is? What do you think the percentage chance on that is?
I would say low. If I went to the guys at work and asked them who they both were, I don't think, you know, for the very, very casual fans, I don't think they would know who both of them were. Maybe right. one or the other, especially the Hispanic fans would know Errol Spence due to him fighting Mikey Garcia. Right. Crawford, I don't know who he's fought of a very, very large name that people out here would know. The English fans would know him because of the fact that he's fought Amir Khan, obviously. But over here in the US, I don't know. I would say not a huge amount of people, but that's the worst thing about boxing. The worst thing about boxing is we don't agree with all these sorts of things. You know, the fact that, like, people don't take the fights, you know, they don't want to cross the road. But at the end of the day, I understand it. I understand that, you know, why promoters don't do it, and I understand why fighters don't do it. They need to, you know, get as much money as they can because it's a business. I don't agree with it. It sucks because we don't see the best fights at the right time. But I understand the reasons behind it.
Right. Right. You know, it's kind of like, do you tell me if this analogy fits or not, but it's kind of like a commission-based job, you know, like you're going to try to sell the most or try to, you know, attract the most business, whatever the product is or whatever, to make the most commission. Mm-hmm. And obviously the fights, these fighters, they like, okay, how can I make the most money? You know, some of them look at differently, or some of them looking at, okay, this guy's going to make me the most money. I can make the most money with this guy, or, you know, I can still make a lot of money by fighting this guy or whatever, you know, like, it's kind of like, I mean, it's kind of almost like a commission-based type of job in a sense, you know?
So you got to sell yourself. That's, some fighters understand that and they're great at that. And then there's other fighters that think they deserve X amount of money and they don't promote themselves at all. And they
right.
have a outrageous look on what they think they deserve, and what they actually bring to the table is completely different.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. Right. We'll see. But yeah, I think that whole Spence Crawford narrative, and I kind of think it's funny that we kind of went on a tangent here, but the whole Spence Crawford narrative, like, I don't think we're going to see it. I don't think we're going to see it. I don't think we're going to see it. Definitely not this year. Definitely not. I mean, 2022, I mean, 2022, I think, and you tell me if you agree with me or not, 2022 is going to be the first legitimate year that we could see that fight, because both at least for Terrence Crawford, they're going to be, he's going to be at that point where he's already at that point, but he's definitely going to be at the point in 2022, assuming he wins whatever fight he has scheduled next or whatever he has the rest of this year. That's going to be the point where he's just like, okay, we, you know, Top Rank is going to probably decide or have the mentality. We have to figure it out. You know, we're just going to have to send him over there. And I know I asked Kevin Ioli that something about that last week. And Kevin Ioli said that, well, you know, the networks have contracts with these fighters, you know, they don't want to send one of their marquee guys in a sense in Terrence Crawford to another network, you know, when they're paying Top Rank to have these guys on their platform, which I get it. You know, that's where the business sense comes in. You know, it's a major factor in the whole business of boxing. But, you know, I think do you think this affects the legacy of both fighters? I think it does, but I think it affects Crawford's legacy a lot more if they never fight.
Yeah, definitely. We'll know more 6 months. Terrence Crawford's contract's up in October, everybody keeps saying.
But I think it's going to be extended. I think it's going to be extended, not voluntarily, but because of the pandemic. I think there's going to be months added to it. So at least maybe another 6 months. So not until next year.
That's going to cause a lot of drama.
So. I think it is. You know, I mean, Top Rank seems like they're pretty sharp enough to include some type of clause in there. Like, hey, you know, I don't know if it's a pandemic clause. I think it's called force majeure or something like that. But
Wilder's trying with Tyson Fury.
Yeah, something like that. So, I mean, who knows? But was it Bob Arum? Didn't Bob Arum say in an interview that he was going to announce Terrence Crawford's fight like last week or this week or something? Like it was going to be like a marquee matchup. I mean,
he says a lot of things, doesn't he?
No, I know. It's entertaining at times. But I don't know, man. I don't know. They're talking about trying to get Pacquiao in the ring and in Dubai or this and that. Like, I really don't know. I really don't know. You know, we'll see how it pans out. But, you know, kind of rounding off that card, Shakhram Gliasov gets the third round KO and remains undefeated over Patricio Lopez Moreno for the WBA International Super Lightweight title. What do you think about Gliasov's win?
Easy work, a little one-sided. I thought Moreno was kind of out of his depth, really. Some of these fights on the card, I kind of think were just kind of like a homecoming, little treats for the bigger name guys so they could get the win in their home, you know, their return to their homes. So you didn't really learn a lot. You know, Gyasev's obviously a good fighter. Like to see him kind of, you know, rack up a few more rounds and just to see where he's
going. Is it Gyasov or Gliasov? So
I think they say Gyasov is.
Oh, I thought it was an L. Never mind. I guess I was wrong.
Easy work for him, put it that way.
Yeah, I can see that. Moving on, fight previews. This upcoming Saturday, the 10th of April, from the Wembley Arena in London on DAZN, the undefeated Conor Benn, 17-0, goes up against Samuel Vargas, 31-6-2, for the WBA Continental Welterweight title. Conor Benn's active, man. Matchroom's definitely throwing him out there at every chance they get. What do you think about, I mean, Vargas has obviously been associated with quite a few decent names over his career, especially in the last maybe 5-6 years. What do you think about this matchup? And does Vargas have a chance against somebody like Conor Benn, who's rising up the ranks pretty quickly?
You know, like you touched on, you know, Vargas has been in there and done it against some, you know, some of the bigger names. You know, obviously he had that fight with Amir Khan, where if I remember rightly, he actually dropped Khan.
It's true. That's true. You know,
but Conor Benn, I think, really, for me, turned the corner in that last fight against, you know, Sebastian Formella. You know, Formella went the distance with Sean Porter, you know, when he was fighting for the WBC. And it was...
And Formella was the IBO welterweight champion at the time, too. I mean, I know they're not recognized as the mainstream, but he did have a title.
Yeah, you know, and he was... And I thought Conor Benn looked really, really good against him. You know, Formella, you know, kind of did okay against Sean Porter. And we all know how good Sean Porter is. So I thought that performance from Conor Benn was really good. This could be a showcase fight for Conor Benn if he goes in there and manages to blow him out. Conor Benn is actually kind of similar to someone else we touched on earlier. He's kind of similar to Oscar Valdez in the fact that, like, he's always in exciting fights, also can get chinned. You know, he had those fights against Cedric Pena where, you know, he probably lost the first fight, but then obviously, you know, came back, fought him again and got the unanimous decision win. But he's always exciting. Obviously, he's got Nigel Benn as his dad, so he kind of had a platform of fans to start out with. But, you know, slowly but surely, you can see he was very raw early in his career. But he's definitely put in the work. He's definitely looking a lot better. And I think this is probably a good step-up fight for him. And it'd be good just to see him, you know, keep active. And I would kind of honestly like to see him go for the, you know, the British titles. I don't know. I know he's picking up, obviously, these WBA Continentals and stuff like that. But, you know, why not step back a little bit and, you know, pick up the British and Commonwealth titles? Because, you know, in Britain, it's a big belt. It's a lovely looking belt. I think people, you know, really enjoy having that. Whereas I think over here, you don't really have, like, you have the North American Boxing Federation and all those guys. But I don't think they're as well loved as winning a British title is in the UK.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. You've mentioned that notion multiple times over the years here on the show, that they're very, those, the British titles are definitely coveted over there in the UK, and we don't really have an equivalent over here in the United States. You talked about, you know, the NABF, but nobody cares about the NABF, you know, like, people get it because, you know, it brings you up the rankings. It kind of gets you that next level and stuff like that. So in that regard, for the boxer's career, I understand, but people here in the United States, they don't care about any titles as long as it's a world title. Mm. You know, that's why, you know, I mean, who was it? I mean, we know this already being associated with the boxing game over the years, you know, as closely as we've been to it in terms of, you know, going to events, covering events, interviewing fighters, personalities, business people, et cetera. But they, we know that these titles, you know, especially if it's on national television, the network wants some type of world title or championship involved because it makes that event or whatever matchup a lot more lucrative. You know, like the casual viewer, oh, this is a world championship title. Even if it's just an interim title, you know, like Ryan Garcia is an interim WBC champion, which, I mean, interim, you know, like, you know, and, or, you know, or like, oh, it's for, or when Davis fought Leo Santa Cruz for the regular WBA world title, 130 pounds, like, oh, it's for the, he's a world champion, like, but it's a regular, you know, they find some way to interject these titles. And like I mentioned, going back to my original point, the United States, nobody cares if it's not a world title, nobody really cares, you know, but over there, the British titles, like you said, they mean something. So I could agree with that. The Conor Benn should probably go after that. But I mean, if since it doesn't seem like he is, maybe the plan is to get him over here to fight in the States, you know, with him winning these types of belts. I mean, what do you think?
It could be. I think sometimes as well, it looks to me, I think some people, when they track their course and they see, you know, I don't know, for example, if he's fighting in the 147 division, if there's a strong champion, a strong British champion, sometimes it's, they may look at it risk reward. Do I really want to risk my O at British level for $60,000? Or should I, you know, just go to the WBA route? I'm already ranked highly in that division and risk it for $500,000. I'm not saying Conor Benn is doing that, but sometimes I feel that you see some fighters, they skip that level because, you know, there's a lot of tricky characters in and around that their weight category. And it's, you know, do I want to risk it for that? Or do I want to risk it for a larger pot of money, you know, later down the line?
No, you're right. You're right. We'll see. Moving on that card, Alexander Espinoza, 22-2, goes up against Ukashir Farouk for the WBC International Silver Bantamweight title. Man, it feels like every fight we've talked about so far has some type of title or trinket title attached to it. What the hell's going on around here? And also on the card, Shannon Courtney, 6-1, goes up against Ebony Bridges, the math teacher from Australia, for the vacant WBA Bantamweight title. This is the first fight for Ebony Bridges under Matchroom Boxing and Eddie Hearn. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe she was supposed to fight last year. And something happened where the opponent fell off and they couldn't, or what exactly happened?
Ebony actually got injured. She was supposed
to fight.
Yeah,
that's
injured her arm or her shoulder. So she couldn't fight. Rachel Ball ended up fighting somebody else. And then this was supposed to be Shannon Courtney against Rachel Ball. Rachel Ball then got injured. So Ebony Bridges got her second chance. So obviously she came out. Should be an interesting fight. It's a very clash of styles and also a kind of clash of personalities.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Yeah.
Yeah, Shannon Courtney kind of been more of the boxer, where Ebony Bridges is definitely, I would say, more of the brawler. But she has a very powerful style. You know, she used to be a bodybuilder, so she's got, you know, good strength, good pop behind her punches, loves the hooks to throw in there. Obviously, you know, it's kind of, you know, a bit of beef between the two. Shannon Courtney saying that, you know, Ebony's only got to where she is because she, you know, comes out in lingerie, kind of uses that sex appeal. And Shannon does herself. If you look at Shannon Courtney's Instagram, she does the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, everybody knows. I mean, you don't think that Eddie Hearn and Matchroom noticed that somebody like Bridges had a following and, you know, she has a sex appeal and she can fight. Yeah, you know, they looked at it. They're like, hey, man, like, there's some, we can make some money there and she could fight, you know? So why not pick her up?
She's brilliant. I love her. I think she looks good. She's a PR masterclass. She knows I'm a good looking female.
She interacts with fans on Twitter all the time.
She'll do God knows how many interviews to promote a fight. She talks smack. She looks like that you can, she had brilliant banter with fans. She goes back and forth with guys. Yeah, Eddie Hearn's not a fool. I remember her hitting when she first started on Twitter and Instagram. And now look at her. In a short period of time, she's got a legion of followers. She attached herself to Leeds United as well. She knows what she's doing. She definitely knows how to self-promote. And if anything, I think other female fighters should follow what she does. Not necessarily, you know, in the lingerie and stuff like that, but just learn from her, you know, what she does. She's great, great, great self-promotion.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about, like, we, you know, there's been discussions over the years telling, like, that, you know, promoters can only do so much for their fighters. You know, it helps a lot if you promote yourself and you go out there and you sell yourself, you do interviews and you do this, this and that, you interact, you know, and with fans, or, you know, you do what you can to promote yourself as well. Because the promoter is going to try to give you platforms and stuff like that. But, you know, if you can sell yourself in addition to their assistance, it's even better. It's going to just raise your stock and raise your paychecks too. So, you know, in terms of boxing as a whole, I think she's a definition of, you know, grabbing it by the balls, quote unquote, and selling herself. You know, she's promoting herself.
Everybody, you know, everybody should watch her. You know, in terms of PR, male, female, anybody in any walk of life. She did an interview today and she kind of touched on, she's like, it doesn't matter what you do. If you're owning your own business, if you're a fighter, whatever, promotion, promotion, promotion. I was watching the media calls today, and she said that, and she talks brilliantly. She's very, very good, very good. And, you know, this should be an interesting fight. It's not necessarily going to be the best in terms of skill, you know, in terms of technique, but, you know, it literally is a boxer and a brawler. She has some pop. She has some pop. She knows how to sell herself, and I definitely think we'll see her again on some Matchroom cards.
Yeah, if she keeps winning, if she wins this fight, it should be a pretty exciting matchup. But if she wins this fight, she keeps winning with the marketing acumen that she has. You know, she can definitely you know, make some pretty good money going forward, and definitely increase her stock. So who knows? Who knows? Rounding off that card, Savannah Marshall, the undefeated Savannah Marshall at 9-0, goes up against the dreaded, the undefeated, the legendary TBA. What do you think about this?
Unfortunate. It was going to be a good fight. Obviously, you know, Savannah Marshall now holds the WBA middleweight championship. She's supposed to fight, I think it's pronounced Femke Hermans. Should have been a good fight. Femke Hermans had a good record. Unfortunately for her, one of her coaches tested positive for COVID. She had to be withdrawn. It was going to be a good matchup. Obviously, they're trying to transition Clarissa Shields and Savannah Marshall into a big fight. So with the fact that, you know, Hermans was a big star in the women's boxing, it would have been a good scalp for Savannah Marshall to then position those two together. Unfortunately, I'm sure they'll end up with some last-minute opponent. Savannah will probably, you know, knock her out. She seemed to have some powers, some good pop. Definitely one of my favorite female fighters. And, you know, I think eventually down the line, I don't know when, but I know that Crusher Shields was talking about hopefully fighting Savannah Marshall on the undercard of Tyson Fury and AJ. I don't know whether that'll happen. I think Clarissa Shields' demands for her purse were outrageous. They may have come back to normality after her pay-per-view card did atrocious. So maybe she has now realized how much she's actually worth.
Maybe. But I think Savannah Marshall makes sense. A matchup with Clarissa Shields and Savannah Marshall just makes sense. I mean, you know, there's not too many options in female boxing. So, you know, and right now they're both undefeated. I know you say you think Savannah Marshall would pick her. I think would beat her. I think Clarissa Shields wins. So, you know, it's a very good discussion, exciting discussion that we'll table at this moment in the future, just in case it gets made, which I think it will get made. There's no way that it has to get made. It has to get made, but we'll see. We'll see how it works out. Also this weekend from the Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut on Showtime, Jerron Boots Ennis, 26-0, goes up against Sergey Lipionets, 16-1-1. This might be my favorite fight that I'm looking forward to the whole weekend. Boots Ennis is obviously one of, right? I mean, I wouldn't even call him a prospect anymore. I would say he's a rising contender in the welterweight division. And he's looked him and Virgil Ortiz, since Virgil Ortiz just fought within the last couple of weeks, him and Virgil Ortiz have been talked about alongside each other that maybe in the future could be a great fight, a mega matchup. And Sergey Lipinets has shown that he could fight. I think his only loss is against
Mikey Garcia,
right? 100, was that 140 pounds?
Yeah.
Right? His only loss against Mikey Garcia. And even in that fight, he connected on Mikey a couple of times. Mikey got hit a couple of times, but you know, he just ultimately he came up on the losing end. I think this is a great matchup. I think this, would you categorize this in the same level as Virgil Ortiz and Mo Hooker in terms of Virgil Ortiz and where he's at in his career against somebody like a Mo Hooker? And would you pretty much say this is the same relevancy in between Ennis and Lipinets?
That's a good question.
I think it is.
Good question.
I think it is.
In terms of, I don't think the names are necessarily as big. I think, unfortunately, Jerron.
I'm talking about talent. Like,
in terms of just your talent,
the matchup between each of these fighters in comparison to Virgil Ortiz and Mo Hooker.
Yeah, if you could say it in terms of just how talented the boxers are. Yeah, I would say it's up there. Very, 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 very similar. You know, Lipinets, when he fought Mikey Garcia, that was for the IBF, the 140-pound IBF world title. Jerron Ennis is probably as good as a lot of world title holders in that division. I think this is a perfect matchup for him, though. I think Ennis is going to look really, really good against Lipinets. And I may go out on a limb and I may say, I think he may even stop Lipinets. And I know nobody's ever done that. Lipinets just is.
That's true.
Is just a juggernaut, like, you know, like Joe Joyce just keeps coming forward.
He was knocked down by Mikey Garcia, but he wasn't stopped.
True. It was a flash knock down that.
Right, right.
Caught him perfectly, and he just went down, and Lipinets jumped straight back up.
Right.
But I honestly think that this is perfect for him. You know, Lipinets is a very come forward fighter, powerful. I think Ennis is just too skillful a boxer. Very, 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 very good. I think he may stop him.
Maybe. Who knows? Obviously, that'd be very, very telling. Because like you said, Lipinets has never been stopped. But I think this is an exciting matchup. You know, I'm looking forward to this matchup the most out of any fight we've talked about so far this weekend. And I have the same type of, you know, anticipation that I had with Mo Hooker and Virgil Ortiz just a couple weeks ago. So, you know, I like this matchup. You know, is it possible that they asked Jerron Ennis, maybe if he gets a post-fight interview, that they ask him about Virgil Ortiz? Do you predict that?
That would be a great matchup. I honestly would like to see that later down the line. I think it would be a better fight when either one or both of them have tried to pick up, you know, some kind of crown, which will be hard because they're in a very, very strong division. I would honestly like to see both of them just go on there and fight some more of the more names, you know, champions, and then come round to it maybe later down the line when they're both, you know, at their peak and one or both have a world championship.
Since Jerron Ennis is obviously under the PBC banner and they have all the main welterweights at 147 pounds, obviously, who would you pick in the future, assuming Jerron Ennis keeps winning, you know, keeps rising? Who would be the first main welterweight fighter between the guys we've seen over the years? You know, Thurman, Garcia, Porter, Spence, whoever. Who would Haymon put Jerron Ennis against up first and to introduce him to that crop of guys?
I think Keith Thurman is a fight or two away from walking away from the spot.
If he didn't already.
Yeah, I think he's literally just looking at his last few paydays. You know, I think a Sean Porter fight would be an interesting fight. You know, obviously, Sean Porter's more of your come-forward brawler and, you know, every single fight is a car crash. So that he's always interesting to watch. And, you know, I could maybe see him picking up a vacant title later down the line when, you know, Errol Spence eventually moves up. I think everybody kind of thinks, you know, he really does have the frame to go up to 154. So, you know, doing the usual, someone goes up, they keep it in the house, like Top Rank like to do, and all those other guys, you know, they pass it down to the next PBC fighter. So, you know, I could see that maybe being an option. Danny Garcia, but there's talk of him moving up to 154 and selling his name for the last few fights. So it's interesting. I honestly think it'll just be the usual, you know, someone who's coming to the end of their career, they give him a nice little payoff to sell their name to another fighter for their resume. Right.
Honestly, now that you mentioned that, I can honestly see that happening a lot sooner than people think. Danny Garcia, definitely, I think he's going to move up to 154 a lot sooner than anybody else at a welterweight at the moment. But I think Spence is not going to be too far behind him. Like you said, Spence is a big guy. He has a frame for 154 pounds. He technically has a frame for 160 pounds as well. And if he kind of, you know, bulks up a little bit more. I mean, like you said, Spence moves up, he vacates those titles, you know, and then all the promoters try to offer some money to these sanctioning bodies. Like, hey, well, we'll give you this much money. Let our guy fight for it. Let our guy fight for it. Oh, no, that, you know, we'll do this. We'll do that. You know, it's going to be, you know, to quote the Charlo brothers, lions only, you know, they're going to jump in like that. So who knows, but we'll see. We'll see. Also on that card, Jerwin Ancajas, 32-1-2, who's also, who's I believe signed to MP Promotions, Manny Pacquiao Promotions, goes up against Jonathan Javier Rodriguez, 22-1. What do you think about this matchup?
Now, this could be one of those sneaky fight of the nights. Jerwin Ancajas, I think most of our, you know, kind of hardcore fans know Ancajas. He's been around for some time. Jonathan Rodriguez, though, you know, the fact that he's nicknamed the Titan because of the amount of power that he has in his punches kind of tells you something about him. And we know that those Mexican fighters have been causing a lot of upsets. This isn't a matchroom card, but, you know, still, his first fight in the US. So this could be a coming out party for him. Very, very heavy-handed. Hasn't really fought a lot of names that people will know. But if you want to have a little flutter, you could always put some money on Rodriguez by KO.
Wow.
Yeah, you could do. Heavy-handed, I'm sure the odds will be good. I'm sure everybody has, you know, Cajas down as a clear favorite, but there's always those, you know, people that come over there. It's been his dream all of his life to fight for a world title in the US. So, you know, hopefully he doesn't wilt under the pressure.
We'll see. It's only one way to find out. You're going to have to watch that Showtime card this weekend. Last event of this weekend from the Osage Casino in Tulsa, Oklahoma on ESPN Oklahoma. Again, another event here. Joe Smith Jr. and Maxim Vlasov fight for the vacant WBO light heavyweight title at 175 pounds. Joe Smith Jr. has shown in his past fights that he always produces a pretty exciting fight. So my expectation for this fight is pretty high in terms of excitement. Should I bring it down? What do you think?
No, I agree with you. I think, you know, you can't help but love, you know, Joe Smith Jr. The fact that he, you know, has a tree cutting business with his father on the side, and, you know, he still works even though he's been in, you know, some you know, some big fights. Obviously, he kind of hit the scene when he actually, you know, ended and knocked out, you know, Bernard Hopkins, you know, knocked him out of the ring. So you can't help but love him. I think I honestly think he'll win this. I think Vlasov has been around for a long time. This is going to be 49th fight. He's, you know, definitely more experienced. You know, I'm sure he'll old man him in the ring, but I just think that Joe Smith Jr. seems to be kind of hitting his peak, you know, around the right time. Unfortunately, though, if he wins this, he wins a fight with Beterbiev or Beterbiev, however you pronounce it.
Right. Yeah, definitely. But I mean, hey, I think everybody still wants to see that.
You mean everybody? If you don't want to see that, are you really a boxing fan? You know, I think Joe Smith will win this, and then we all win. Joe Smith against Beterbiev. Great.
Hopefully.
Fight. Great. Yeah. Fight. They need Hopefully. That. We need fans. We need that in Las Vegas. We need fans in attendance, and I need to be in the attendance.
Yeah, definitely. That definitely would be. I think Joe Smith Jr., I think they would just send him to the UK, though, or not the UK, but Europe, in a sense. So, but who knows? Or Russia, where's Beterbiev from? He's Russian, right?
Yeah, he's Russian. Yeah.
So, I mean, who knows? Who knows? But yeah, that's the expectation. So we'll see. Rounding off that card, Efe Ajagba goes up against Brian Howard. What do you think about this matchup?
Just not sold on Ajagba. I think in the last couple of fights, I think he's kind of got found out. He's really just in there, I think, because he's Adonis looking. You know, he's strong, he's powerful, and so far, he's been able to just overpower guys. I think when he, you know, really fights somebody of note, really kind of knows what they're doing and is actually in there to win, I think he may come unstuck. You know, he hasn't got the pop and the power of something like a Deontay Wilder. He kind of just is very rough still. If they're going to, you know, if he's going to be what I think they thought they would be, I think they need to, you know, take him away, you know, give him a long, long time to kind of learn the sport a little bit better and then, you know, come back to the drawing board, unless they're just going to, you know, like we touched on earlier, build him, and then just sell him.
Right.
Put him in one big fight, and then that's it.
Yeah, cash out, in a sense. News and notes section of the podcast this week. A report has reported that Ryan Garcia and former champion Javier Fortuna have agreed to terms on a fight this upcoming summer. I like the fight. You know, I think it's a good matchup for Garcia after somebody like Campbell. You know, regardless of what people think about Garcia, like, you know, he calls out all these guys, Davis, this, that, you know, he says all these guys' names, you know, he does it more for just to get the attention. But I think Fortuna is a good matchup for him at this stage of his career, especially after a big win like Campbell. Do you agree with me?
In terms of, you know, opponent, yeah, I think it is good. But, and I understand, you know, that he does all these things and calls all these fighters out and makes all these promises. But there's only so many times you can cry wolf about, you know, saying like, well, I want to fight this guy and fight that guy. Like, don't call him out. If you're not going to fight them, don't call them out. You know, Eddie Hearn posted today that they made an offer to Ryan Garcia for the Devin Haney fight, because people were kind of talking smack on the Devin Haney, Jorge Linares. And Eddie said, he goes, we offered it to Ryan. He turned it down. He wouldn't take the fight.
Yeah. I mean, look at it that way. Garcia said in 2019 or whatever, one of his fights, he had said, oh, he's like, next I'm going to get Linares and then I'm going to get, you know, Davis or something. Like, he called out Linares at multiple times over the last like year and a half. He did. There's interviews of him out there saying that, or post-fight interviews, you know, just depending on what platform it is. But he calls out Linares. He was like, I'm going to get Linares, you know, then I'm going to get Tank and this and that. And how come the Linares fight didn't happen? They're both Golden Boy fighters, you know, and then he doesn't fight Linares. So Devin Haney is just like, okay, well, I'll fight Linares then. I think that was a power move on Devin Haney's part. He was just like, okay, you're not going to fight this guy? The guy you said you were going to fight? I'll fight him. I think that was a power move.
Isn't Ryan the interim? Devin Haney's supposedly the full. Devin Haney's not injured.
Right.
So why is the interim not fighting him?
Exactly.
The Luke Campbell fight was for that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, this interim stuff, whatever. It's stupid. But
and Teofimo Lopez is the, I don't know, what is he, the franchise? And then
I don't even know how that works. Didn't they just recently elevate somebody to the franchise champion in some division?
I would imagine so. I'll try it.
I don't know.
Yeah, they did. It was Juan Estrada, and then they put a Rung Visai.
Right. Okay.
So they could do the Juan Estrada Chocolatito.
Yeah. Thing. So I mean, you got to think about it. How the WBC initially, how they described the franchise title when they first gave it to Canelo a couple years ago, they said, "Oh, it's given it on a very rare occasions to fighters who are above the sport, who do so much for the sport, for the community, for the boxing community, for the world." That's how they sold it. But that was never the case. You can obviously see that. The franchise title is there to make promoters happy, to be able to make certain fights so somebody like the WBC can keep getting a cut and still keep the relationship with that said promoter alive. The franchise title is a way out for them. Like, hey, okay, we'll just make him a franchise champion. You know, better? Good. Okay. We can move forward. It's an exit door. It's a revolving exit door in a sense. That's what it is. But, you know, I like this matchup. I think Fortuna, like I mentioned, just reiterating what I'm saying. Fortuna's a good opponent for Garcia after the Campbell fight. You know, I know people want to see him, you know, fight like a Davis or fight these guys like a Teofimo Lopez, a Lomachenko, and these guys like that. But, you know, he just calls them out for clout. Everybody knows that, you know, but he's likely, I mean, I wouldn't even say likely, he is the most popular fighter at 135 pounds, or the most well-known fighter, definitely at 135 pounds. And possibly, I mean, would you say he's at least top five most well-known boxers in the world at this point?
If you look at his social media, he must be.
I think he has to be. Yeah. I think he has to be. I mean, maybe even top three, top four. I mean,
you got like Anthony Joshua, obviously.
Yeah, Canelo, Joshua, Tyson Fury, and
Brian Garcia, right
there. You know, so I mean, like we said before, like I know he has the interim title, which is the interim titles and all these, you know, those type of titles are they're irrelevant. They don't matter. But you know, he brings in the money. He brings in the fans because of his popularity. So, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. So we'll see. But I like that fight. You know, it's a good matchup for him and his development as he moves forward. Hopefully to a bigger fight like a Devin Haney or a Tank Davis, a Lomachenko, a Teofimo Lopez. Hopefully, because yeah, this kid he says he wants these fights. So and you know, eventually he's gonna have to get them. But we'll see. We'll see. Also in the news and notes section, WBC bantamweight champion Nordine Ubali will finally be making a defense of his world title against the number one ranked contender, the legendary Nonito, the Flash, right? Isn't that his nickname, the Flash, Nonito Donaire, reportedly on May 29th in Los Angeles. As of right now, this is just a report. I don't think it's been announced as official yet, but these guys were supposed to fight. It seems like a while ago, no?
I think early last year. I think.
Right? It might have been 2019. I don't even know.
Long time ago.
Yeah, it feels like it was a long time ago. But you know, hopefully, it's still an interesting matchup. I'm surprised it's actually kind of in LA. Maybe it's going to be a part of another co-main event or another main event or something like that. Do you think this is going to be a standalone main event?
It's the same night as the Devin Haney Linares fight. So we'll have a card in Vegas and we'll also obviously have one in LA if this ends up being 100% confirmed, because obviously it's just kind of a rumor. We've not seen any posters yet.
Right.
I think in terms, if you're a boxing hardcore, it is a very, very, very good fight. But like you touched on, is it going to sell? Would you rather watch that fight than a Devin Haney Linares?
I like Nonito Donaire. I'm a fan. I've been a fan of his for years. I mean, I would hope this is an interesting fight. Nonito Donaire did fight the monster in a way. I think in 2019, and he did very well. He probably gave the monster the toughest fight of his career up until that point. But I mean, was that the last ditch effort for him? You know, is he still going to be that same guy? Obviously, 6 years ago, Nonito Donaire was one of the best boxers in the world, pound for pound. He fought everybody. You know, the guy wasn't scared of anybody. He still isn't, in a sense. But who knows? But I think, you know, if both of these events stay on the same date, Linares, Haney, Ubali, and Donaire, I mean, I think everybody knows that Haney Linares should be the more interesting competitive matchup. So, but we'll see. We'll see. Like you said, that this isn't officially announced yet. So it's not official yet, according to the promoters involved. So it could possibly be moved, or it could be possibly added to another card to kind of help maybe ticket sales and stuff. But the month of May is really stacking up to be a great boxing month, because a lot of places, at least here in the United States, are relaxing their restrictions for COVID-19 and this whole pandemic. And May is being rumored to be looked at as, like, you know, kind of close to a lot of capacity for fans, and restrictions are being loosened. I know today the governor of California did say that the middle of June is when he's looking at lifting pretty much all restrictions, not all of them, but I would say 90% of them, here in the state of California. Which, you know, is pretty, that's great news, you know, assuming the trend keeps going down. So yeah, I think that's why a lot of boxing promoters are starting to kind of overload for May, because they know, okay, in May we can kind of really push forward and really get the most bang for our buck in terms of these events. So hopefully it keeps going, man. Cause, you know, it's been a long time since we had, we actually had a lot of boxing during the pandemic. I don't think we can complain. We did have a lot of boxing, but May should be the first one where there's actual legitimate fans. There's, you know, maybe media in attendance and everything, you know, kind of the first sense of normality in the sport of boxing. So I hope it continues. What do you think?
No, I agree. I think, you know, May, I think Vegas and stuff like that is a kind of looking at opening back up. That's why we're going to see, you know, Josh Taylor, Devin Haney fights out there. Then hopefully Los Angeles will, you know, kind of follow suit. Interesting times, you know, hopefully everything goes well and we kind of get back to some kind of normality.
Absolutely, absolutely. And before we wrap it up here, please remember that we have shirts and sweaters available for the last round on Fit Warrior Brand. The links are on our social media, on our Instagram and Twitter. It's on my Twitter. I believe it's on my Twitter bio and stuff like that. What's the exact website, Mike?
I think it's www.fitwarrior.com.
Fitwarrior.com, something like that, right?
Oh, you can go to FTWR. I think they are on Instagram. You can see everything they got have on there. You know, they sponsor, you know, probably the biggest guy that has a lot of their stuff and a lot of merchandise is Teofimo Lopez.
Right. Yeah, yeah. There's quite a few boxers on there and quite a few other boxing-related companies and platforms that are on there. So we appreciate Fit Warrior Brand for helping us with the merchandise. And then, you know, if you can support us, if you're listening to this podcast and you have some extra cash laying around to support us, go buy some t-shirts, buy a sweater. You know, we appreciate it. You know, those merchandise purchases will go to help us keep funding this podcast and keep traveling to the events to cover in person and get some bonus episodes on location episodes to get more content, especially now that we're coming out of the pandemic. So buy the shirt, buy the sweater. Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us before we sign off here.
At The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And obviously joining next week, we'll be reviewing all the fights we just spoke about. And looking forward to the huge Jake Paul, Ben Askren card.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. Definitely. I know you're looking forward to that. So for my co-host, Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is the last round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is the Last Round Podcast.